者欢乐会。You are listening to the Shortwave Shindig.
This is the Shortwave Shindig.
Of the Shortwave Shindig.
This is the international service of the Shortwave Shindig.
You are tuned to the external service of the Shortwave Shindig.
To the radio station where the mighty hosts of heaven sing. Turn your radio on, turn your radio on. If you want to hear the songs of Zion come from the land of endless spring, get in touch with God. Turn your radio on, turn your radio on, and listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on. Glory share, turn the lights down low, and listen to the master's radio. Get in touch with God, turn your radio on. Brother, listen to the Glory Land chorus, listen to the glad hosannas roar. Turn your radio on, turn your radio on. Get a little taste of joy's waiting. Get a little heaven in your soul. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on. And listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on. And glory share. Turn the lights down low. And listen to the master's radio. Get in touch with God. Turn the radio on. Listen to the songs of the fathers and the mothers and the many friends gone on before. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on. Some eternal morning we shall meet them over on the Hallelujah shore. Turn your radio on. turn your radio on. Turn your radio on. And listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on. And glory share. Turn the lights down low. And listen to the master's radio. Get in touch with God. Turn your radio on.
Revolutionary voice of the Shortwave Shindig, broadcasting live from the Quaker Socialist Republic of Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania, a free voice in the Americas. We're coming to you via the mighty blowtorch of the Everglades, WRMI, Okeechobee, Florida, on the assigned frequencies of 6855 and 9395 kilohertz. And now, here's the host of the Shortwave Shindig, David Gorin!
Everybody.
Hello, world!
Dada, 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 dada. Hey! Glad you're all tuning in. Welcome to the Shortwave Shindig, live from the 30th Annual Winter Shortwave Listeners Fest. We're excited to be back on the air celebrating the 30th Fest and the Shortwave Listening Experience for the next hour with our resident folk singer, Saul Brody, and special guest. Stay with us at 0300 or 11 p.m. EST for a two-hour program featuring the best of shortwaves long distance, an open call for shortwave-inspired works made in celebration of the 30th anniversary of the Fest and the 20th anniversary of Wave Farm, a media arts organization and the co-sponsor of Shortwaves Long Distance. And now, a word from a shortwave broadcaster you might be familiar with.
Hi, this is Brother Stair with the Old Recumbent Ministry, the most prolific shortwave broadcaster on the air today, and we congratulate you all as you join together here with the North American Shortwave Association on the occasion of the 30th Annual Winter SWL Fest. God bless you. Tune in shortwave and hear Brother Stair on the Old Recumbent. Maranatha.
Maranatha to you too, Brother Stair. Anyway, it was nice of him to do that. So, and he was right. He's the most prolific, right?
Yeah.
Hey, who do we have here? Why, it's Richard Cuff and John Figliozzi, who are our Festmeisters, and they want to welcome you to the 30th Annual Fest and the Shortwave Shindig. So, how's it going, guys?
I think it's going pretty good.
Yeah, so far it's we had a bonus day since it was number 30, so we've been festing for more than 24 hours already. Have already had a series of great forums and a great time of talking about radio and remembering fests of the past and celebrating the future of radio in all its forms. So it's been great so far.
Have there been any highlights from any particular forums or exchanges between participants?
Well, I think since all the forum presenters are here, we should say that the highlights was all of them. But we've covered, and that's I don't mean that facetiously, but we've covered a lot of ground. We've covered internet radio, we've covered shortwave, we've covered history, and we have more to come.
I think part of what makes the Fest so great always is the volunteerism that is evident here in the diversity of subjects that we cover and the amount of research that folks put into preparing their presentations and the joy and enthusiasm with which they share them with everyone. And their approachability as well, because most everyone says, come on and see me, I'm here all weekend if you have any questions.
What's coming up tomorrow? Is there anyone in Kazakhstan could get on a plane now? Could they win the air in time?
I suppose if you get favorable connections and can get it through customs really quickly and are not from the seven countries, you could probably do so. But most certainly if you're within the reach of the Philadelphia metropolitan area, most certainly. I believe our sessions start at 8:30 tomorrow morning and run through all day. And most certainly, we've got room for folks to come on in and join us. You can check out the website, swlfest.com, for the details of the schedule for tomorrow.
Cool. I want to ask you guys a couple questions from your vantage point. You've been taking care of the fest for about half of the time. We'll be hearing from the founders in a little bit. I think they're preparing themselves as we speak.
Yes, yes. It's the oiling the vocal cords.
So how's the fest changed over the years? And what are some signature moments?
Well, I mean, you can see how its origins in the name of it, the Winter SWL Shortwave Listeners Festival. It was almost completely devoted to shortwave listening at the beginning. But over time, radio has changed, and with it, the fest has changed to expand its remit to what we call now radio in all its forms, all the platforms that radio uses, to try to make it more enjoyable, or as enjoyable as it can be, for not only those listening, but for those who see it as a hobby as well.
And we've also, for decades actually, featured elements of the radio hobby beyond just shortwave. There have been the Scanner Scum have been part of the fest for many years, and of course that isn't exactly shortwave, but nonetheless it's radio and radio hobby related activities. So we've had the Scanner Scum for years, and of course, as John has mentioned, we've gone beyond the world of shortwave to focus on the kinds of content that were historically delivered by shortwave and ways to experience that content nowadays as well, and ways to experiment with new technologies to hear radio as an experimenter and hobbyist might be interested.
So what do you see in the future for the fest? Shortwave was changing, but people's interest is remaining in the things that you just talked about.
Well, I mean, I think the future of the fest will be guided by the people that you see in this audience here. It's going to be, as long as people continue to come, as long as the people continue to show interest, as long as their interests expand, the fest will expand along with it. And I think we're tickled pink it's gone 30 years. I mean, it's hard to believe that some of us were just mere youths when we started this. But, and you know, while we're still young in spirit, I think when we walk past the mirror, we learn something a little bit different. But we hope to go as long as the fest is, as long as everyone here will carry us.
And I would add that John puts out a casting call for folks to prepare forums and to prepare subject matter. And we had to turn folks away this year. We just did not have the time available for all of the great ideas that folks had for the fest and for forums. So that gives us encouragement as well, knowing that there is interest in presenting, because not only is it just interest in participating and folks showing up to be here, but folks willing to put together the technical sessions. The fest has always been about the combination of fellowship and education. Now, back in some of the original notes that the founders had assembled along the way, and that was a critical goal that they had that we intend to keep going, is this combination of fellowship and fun, a family reunion environment, as well as education and the capability to learn.
Great. Well, thanks, guys, and thanks for the great work you do putting this together.
And thanks. Thank you for being here and putting on the shindig.
Thank you. Okay. Now we're going to bring up Saul Brody again, who's going to play an old favorite, but we haven't done it live on the air. We're just doing a little Jess Puglisi of Wayne Farm is helping with the tech here. So please stand by.
A little song here by Red River Dave McHenry. No, it's not going to stay. Just a ship out on the ocean, a speck against the sky, a millionaire heart flying sad that day, with her partner Captain Newman, on the 2nd of July. Her plane fell in the ocean far away. There's a beautiful, beautiful field far away in a land that is fair. Happy landings to you, Amelia Earhart. Farewell, First Lady of the Air. She radioed position, and she said that all was well. Although the fuel within her tanks was low. But they'd land on Howland Island to refuel her monoplane. Then on their trip around the world they'd go. There's a beautiful, beautiful field. There's a beautiful, beautiful field. Far away in a land that is fair. Far away in a land that is fair. Happy land. Amelia Earhart. Farewell, First Lady of the Air. Well, half an hour later, an SOS was heard. Weak, but still her voice was brave. In the shark-infested waters, her plane went down that night. In the blue Pacific, to a watery grave. There's a far away in a land that is fair. Happy landings to you, Amelia Earhart.
I hear you.
Farewell, First Lady of the Air. Now you have heard my story of that awful tragedy. We pray that she might fly home safe again. In years to come, though others blaze a trail against the sky, we'll ne'er forget Amelia and her plane. Far away in a land that is fair. Happy landings to you, Amelia Earhart. Farewell, First Lady.
In a future shindig, I will probably do more on Amelia Earhart because I found an interesting book a couple weeks ago, and there's quite an amateur radio component to her flight. She was monitored by these three hams in LA and people all around the world, and there's a lot of stories about who might have heard some of her distress messages, including a little girl in New Jersey. There's a lot of interesting stories out there. So if anyone is actually an Amelia Earhart expert on the communication side, get in touch with me. Anyway, what are we doing now? Let's see. Thanks, Saul. And here's a greeting from an old friend of FestGoers and shortwave listeners worldwide.
Greetings from the Emmental, Switzerland. This is Bob Zanotti. Bob Thoman and I send you our very best wishes for a successful 30th anniversary edition of the SWL Winterfest, a long-standing tradition. Congratulations. I've had the pleasure of attending three fests, I think, so I know firsthand how much fun they are. I also want to send my compliments to those whose hard work make it all possible. Although I can't be with you to share this year's event personally, I have vivid memories of the fests I've attended and will certainly be with you, at least in spirit.
Thanks to Bob Zanotti for his shout-out. We miss seeing him here at the fest. Now, with a little Saul Brody banding in the background, we're going to bring up Rich D'Angelo, who's the executive director of NASWA, the North American Shortwave Association. He's going to greet the festgoers and our listeners worldwide.
Am I?
You are. I told you.
Dave asked me to talk about the early days of the club, some of the club history.
There we go.
Okay, hopefully that will work a little better. The club is now in its 56th year, having been founded back in September of 1961. And the founder of the club was a man named Sterling Pike, who enjoyed the club so much he stayed around for the first four issues before resigning, which was typical of how clubs in that time period ran. He was replaced by a guy named Richard Roll, who was a teenager in Hamburg, New York. So old-timers weren't running the club business back in those days. I mean, he was just a teenager. He stayed with it for a year or two before Bill Eddings, who we've named an award after, became our executive director and ran things for about 10 years until he passed away. But during that time, the club actually grew rather quickly. 10 new members a month were joining in the 62-63 period, and a lot of things were going on within the club. By 1966, shortwave had become the major component of the club, and we had a referendum within the club to turn the club into all shortwave broadcast. And that happened in August of 66, which happens to coincide with when I joined the club. So I've been with the club continuously since then. The growth period was pretty good after that. The club grew pretty sharply. Don Johnson became editor of the Shortwave Center, which is now a section that John Figliosi edits. And the shortwaves news column became was Newsroom, which later became Listener's Notebook, which now I edit. So it just proves if you stay around long enough, you wind up editing something for the club. That's either good or bad. Of the gang of three who formed this thing, all those guys had major positions within the club at some point in their life before they went on to greener pastures and some other activities. Bob Brown was the executive director for a half dozen, seven, eight, 9 years, something like that. Chris Field was his assistant in that position. And Harold Cohns, for almost two decades, was our editor-in-chief. So those guys' roots go back into the club as well. So it's been a long time. The early days were kind of touch and go. People came and went rather quickly, but it was a very young club, very young organization. Not today. You didn't have too many people, I'll call it our age, in the club in those days. Most of them were fairly young, a lot of teenagers. Typical pattern was you edit a column, and then they stopped editing when they went away to college and found other things, and then got back into the hobby after college. So it's been a long haul, long 50 years, 56 years. Bill Oliver, our current publisher and business manager, took that role in 1977 and has been doing that now for 40 years. Poor Bill, there's no end in sight for him. So it's been a long haul. Okay, well, now I get the great pleasure of introducing the guys who formed this 30 years ago, the infamous Gang of Three, Bob Brown, Chris Field, and Harold Combs.
Welcome to the Gang of Three, Harold Combs, Chris Field, and Bob Brown. So, what have you guys done? What have you brought?
We've gotten tired. Start off, Bob.
Hola!
Hola!
Hola! Well, Harold and I met in Mississauga for the NR convention. And we sat up there on the balcony and immediate friendship was formed, at least I think so.
Yeah, my glass.
And Harold had belonged to two shortwave groups in Virginia, Newport News area, I believe. And we had the 7240 shortwave listeners net, which was quite popular back then, every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. And most everybody on the East Coast that was interested in shortwave could hear it. So Harold and I talked about, you know, why don't we have one of these small shindigs up your way and see how many people would be interested in coming.
I think alcohol might have had something to do with it too.
So we talked a little bit more about it and then we left. And I came home and Chris and I have known each other forever, and Chris was very interested in shortwave. He had been listening for over a year at least prior to my visit to Mississauga. And I said to Chris, I said, you know, I was talking to Harold Combs down from Virginia, and he says, maybe we ought to have a get-together. So Chris said, hey, that sounds like a great idea. So kudos to Chris, he jumped right in. And, you know, we came up with all these ideas about contacting international broadcasters. Chris, why don't you say a little bit about some of that?
Well, sure, yeah. I guess Bob said, you want to help me, you're the local guy, so let's get together and find a place. And I don't honestly remember who found the Fiesta Motor Inn, but I lived a couple miles from it. And so we went over there and we talked to Harry Davis, the manager. You got a picture, Harry? It was a short, white hair, white mustache, and like an Italian or Swiss cap, looked like an old mobster. And we went in and said, we want to have this gathering here. We don't know how many people. We want to have a banquet. And famous words of Harry, everything we asked for when we're negotiating a contract, he'd say, you guys are busting my balls. But we ended up coming up with it. And so, you know, Bob said, well, Harold's going to work on the program. I'm going to work on this. And I said, well, I'll write to the international broadcasters for free items. And I'll write to Fred Osterman, Bob Grove, and at the time, Dick Robinson from EEB, and see if they'll come up with any prizes. And, you know, they didn't know Bob and I from a can of paint. They probably knew Harold, but from the start, they supported and donated. I think the first prize was a Sony 2010, maybe?
Might have been.
Yeah, that was a really amazing thing to me, that here were a bunch of guys that, you know, hey, we're going to have a meeting, and then we're going to throw the microphone on the guy that's talking. We're going to have a meeting, and we would like to give away prizes. Will you send something? And they did. And Fred has been with us. Yep. Ever since, for all the years, Fred has supported the fest in many different ways.
There are a number of interesting anecdotes from the first fest, and I'll preface one that will come up by Bob and I showed up the day before, and there was a major ice storm going on, and somebody said, hey, Chris, why don't you go up on the roof and put up this antenna? So I said, sure. I climbed up on the roof and jumped right on the roof and sunk down into 6 inches of soft tar. I said, well, I'm already there, so I'm putting the antenna up. Went across the roof, put the antenna up, walked back, climbed down the ladder, and everybody was over the other side of the lobby, so I walked through the lobby real quickly and left size 10 and a half footprints all across the carpet.
Well, it was about then that we discovered the beautiful pink and purple Pancho Villa room.
And that is Harold Chris in that room with that name.
It was pink and it was purple, and it had parquet flooring, not a single piece of which was actually attached to the floor. And it was raining, and they had a very intricately placed row of trash cans to catch all of the water that was draining off of the roof. It was a very pleasant experience that we encountered there. The ceilings had some sort of material on it that glowed in the dark. I'm not sure what that is, probably radioactive, I'm not quite sure what it was. And the nicest part was the bar in the restaurant. As people left the bar after having a little bit too much, they rammed their fists through the wall, so the whole bar wall was broken out. And I wondered about the two guys I just met in Pennsylvania, what kind of a place it was that they decided. And it turned out it was also a wedding chapel.
So yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And the actual night of the fest, when we first got things kicked off, the ice storm turned into a major snowstorm. And kudos to those, how many do we have?
40.
40 to 50 or 40. Yeah.
Kudos to those that came, because it was snowing like heck.
It was snowing so much, we ordered pizza. That was our first banquet. We ordered pizza, and the pizza guy had to skate down the hill to get to the room. Couldn't get his car down the hill.
So it turned out to be something that we just had a lot of fun with. And
the guy being shot in the dining room that night might have, that was the high point. Wasn't a participant.
I found out later that he was blamed for the footprints across.
Yeah, there you go.
But the neat thing was, from the very start, the people that showed up, we didn't have a written program. So somebody said, well, we've got some poster board, we've got some magic markers. Everybody jumped up and started putting things together. And, oh, we need you, and you. You want to sit on a panel? Oh, yeah. So it was volunteers right from the start. Everybody jumping in and saying, well, we're here to talk about radio, let's have some fun and do it.
And we had one of our forums was an Indonesian DXer forum. Now, that's a pretty esoteric thing. We had like 8 people on the panel, and they were all experts on Indonesia. It was a real eye-opening thing for me to see, look at all these crazy people, and they know all this stuff. It was really great.
And I recall after the fest, the first fest, we start talking more about it on the Shortwave Listeners Net, we got response from people that said, boy, I wish I was at that thing. Mm-hmm. And so we were kind of like stuck. It was,
Stunned.
And the response was really great, and people wanted us to do it again.
And we were crazy enough to do it again.
So we moved to Culpsville, and luckily for us, the folks at Culpsville were very welcoming.
They let us put the beer keg in the bathtub.
Yeah, where else can you get a hotel to let you wheel in your own beer keg?
Yeah, we broke the bathtub one time.
Yes, we did.
Be correct.
Very good.
So
before we wrap up, can each share a signature moment of something that happened to you at one of the fests over the years?
Well, I think my signature moment isn't really a moment. Now that I'm old and broken down and decrepit, and I think back over all the fest and looking at all the pictures and stuff, I realize how extremely significant, although I don't think about it every day, how significant the fest has been in my life. I see people once a year that have become very, very good friends, but I only see them once a year, and they all have the same crazy radio thing going on that I do. So my one moment has lasted 30 years.
I'll have to say mine is that this is kind of like a family reunion every year, but the real signature moment was when John and Rich agreed to take over. And I'll make one more comment. There are pictures of the first fest. Harold has some colored ones, but there's I have some black and whites. Sheldon has them at the table if you want to look at them.
And for myself, because my family got involved personally, my wife, Gail, even my two kids, Jody and Brian, they helped out at the second fest. My wife and Jody, who was 8 at that time, sold raffle tickets, and Jody's 38th birthday was yesterday. So it was a family thing. She used to take phone calls from people that called in for the net and take their loggings and run them upstairs to me as we ran the net. And as Harold and Chris have both said, it's been a family affair. And without all of you to do this every year, and Rich and John, it's just amazing that it's lasted 30 years, and we hope that it lasts for many more.
I think I'm going to cry in a minute.
Well, thanks, guys. You truly are the founding fathers of the fest. Thanks for what you started. And now we're going to get Saul Brody back up here again with the magical following microphone, and he's going to do a folk song from Vietnam, the whole interview.
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. The U.S. Army sent me to Vietnam in 1966, and I went down the road and checked out the 48th Assault Helicopter Company. This was in Phan Rang for you. Old Vietnam hands, APO at 96316. I went down there and hung out with the 48th Assault chopper pilots and discovered this whole tradition of Army aviation folk songs. And they gave me their, a lot of them were parodies, very funny parodies, a lot of them. And they gave me their mimeographed, remember mimeographing? Their mimeographed songbook. And I looked in there, and there was this song in there, and it was credited to Captain Chris Christopherson. I figured it was probably the Chris Christopherson. I wound up asking him a couple years later when I got back to the States, is he the guy who wrote this? And he said, yeah, I guess they took the song and took it over to Vietnam and changed the place names in it. But I wasn't quite happy with that because I later discovered that the song, it's older than Chris Christopherson. There's a version that Oscar Grant recorded called Itazuki Tower from the Korean War. And there's I have a tape of Arthur Godfrey singing Teterboro Tower as a civilian. He was a civilian pilot, remember Arthur Godfrey. Anyway, here's Chris Christopherson's version. It takes place completely over the radio, which is why I'm singing it tonight. Hello, Phan Rang Tower, this is Blue Star 851. I'm 5 miles from your airfield, my fuel is almost gone. My engine's coughing fire, my tack needles have split. You'd better call your crash crew out, this damn thing's gone quick. Hello, Blue Star 851, this is Phan Rang Tower. We can't call out our crash crew, this is their coffee hour. And we would just assume you didn't land here for a while, because our visibility is not a half a mile. Hello, Phan Rang Tower, this is Blue Star 851. I'd love to put this landing off, but that just can't be done. My engine's coughing fire and I'm running out of gas. If I don't set this chopper down, the damn thing's gonna crash. This is Phan Rang Tower calling Blue Star 851, and we would like to know what kind of flight you are on. Our operations officer says you have not been cleared. You'll be grounded 30 days if you land that chopper here. Hello, Phan Rang Tower, this is Blue Star 851.
I'm up in pilot's heaven and my flying days are done. You can tell my old commander I'm sorry that I crashed. You can tell your operations officer to stick it up his ass.
Okay, now Paul's going to do another demonstration of code warming, CW warm-ups on the harmonica, and then we're going to have some shout-outs.
Great. Some of you may know his call letters. A fellow named Bill Clark, I believe is his last name, W9ZN. Anybody remember him from this? He's still around, working the CW bands, and I've been chatting with him, and I noticed that when it first gets on the air, he uses sort of a warm-up exercise. I guess you have to use a straight key for this. And I was intrigued by this. I asked him all about it, and he said he's an old Navy operator. He also is a TV engineer for WGN-TV in Chicago. But he said that he got this warm-up exercise from Signal Corps operators. So I'd like to know more about that, if any of you know anything about it. He went something like this.
To send greetings to people listening in, and we have our audience wrote a sheet of people to say hello to, but first I'd like to send our warm fest greetings to Marianne Kehoe, Mark Meese, Kevin Carey, Jack Widner, the professor, and other friends who couldn't make it here this year. And from our audience, we want to say hello to Lisa Marie, Tom Gorin Kiesis, Ian McFarlane, our old friend from Radio Academy International, Victor Gunatilaka in Sri Lanka, who has been at the fest a few times, Bob, formerly of Swiss Radio, Bob Zanotti, and probably Bob Toman too, with the two Bobs, Bob and Betty, George in Germany, and now Golden Throat Paul Ladd will take over.
We'd also like to say hello to Glenn Hauser, Luke Phillips, all New York City MCOM hands, all the Long Island Band, all the Long Beach Island D-Expedition members, to all Winterfest Past attendees who couldn't make it this year. Hope you're enjoying the broadcast and come back home next year for 31. Hello to BADX and Bars members from John Fisher. Also hello to Fred and Bob Osterman and John Zimmerman in Olathe, Kansas.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Saul. Hey, it rhymes. All right, here, one moment.
Shortwave Shindig from the 2017 Winter SWL Fest. I'm Marie Lamb, former host of DXing with Cumbre, who continues to be busy with radio at WCNY Classic FM in Syracuse, New York. Although I can't be there in person this year, I'm honored that David Gorin has asked me to say hello to you all. As the song by Queen says, radio, someone still loves you, and I am glad that so many people around the world still love radio, especially all of you at the fest. 73, and have a wonderful time.
lot of sheep went to say milking.
That friendly theme tells us that it's time to meet the shortwave archivists. First we'll have Thomas Witherspoon and then Mark Fahey will come up.
Well, thanks for having me here, Dave.
Hey, I'll even turn up the mic for you.
Yay! Okay.
So, Thomas Witherspoon is a man with many interesting radio projects, and he also runs the Shortwave Archive, this Parthenon-sized structure in the house out of Asheville, North Carolina.
Yes, marble columns. It's great.
So, so what's been happening in the Shortwave Archive in the past year? And I know you have a sample or two to play for us.
Yeah, well, the Shortwave Archive continues to grow. In fact, one of the really cool things that happened, we've been around now for a few years. People hear about us, and we get a lot of recordings. We have a lot of recordings that are made today. You know, I add some that I make, of broadcasts that are happening today. A lot of other contributors do the same thing. They capture little bits of history and some of the mundane things that happen as well. And but as the archive has gotten more attention, people have come out of the woodwork with really nice old recordings that come off, you know, reel-to-reel tapes, and they've been adding them to the archive over time, and we've gotten some amazing ones. Just this past year, one contributor in particular that found out about us, Ian Holder in Australia, has added just an amazing amount of historical recordings that have really added some depth to the archive, and it's just been amazing to see what comes in.
So line up one cut for us to listen to, and then since time is flying, then we'll talk with Mark Fahey after that.
Sounds great. Okay, so the next recording, or the recording you're going to hear right now, is of the last Apollo flight to the moon, which was Apollo 17 in 1972. This was recorded by Ian Holder in Australia back in, I think this was on December 7th of 1972, starting around 0230 GMT. And you can start now. This is the very last flight to the moon in the Apollo series. Probably win the award at the Fest for coming the farthest distance to get here. This is not his first time here. In fact, when he arrived at, it was 6 a.m. yesterday morning, he had been over 40 hours without sleep, and he actually made it through the day yesterday. He's kind of a marathon guy. His name is Mark Fahey.
I'm an Aussie. We can take it. Thanks, Thomas.
Hey, Mark.
Hey.
Welcome to Shortwave Shindig.
Thank you very much.
So Mark often refers to himself as a broadcast anthropologist.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about your approach to recording things and archiving, and I know you have an interesting new project that you've launched.
Sure. So my interest in radio is primarily, I live in Australia and grew up in Australia, and it's a long way from everywhere, and you feel very disconnected from the rest of the world. And this is prior to the internet and modern communications. So there's all, I've always been really hungry for information and to learn what else is happening on the planet so far away. So shortwave radio and radio in general was a way that I could actually access information. So my interest was hearing information and hearing sounds from the other part of the world more so than radio. And a project I'm working on at the moment is building a whole series of software-defined radios. Technology has now got to a point that you can build remote radios, put them around the world, and actually access the local sounds anywhere in the world, really, where you can get an internet connection and a reliable power supply. So this allows sounds which will probably disappear over the next 50 years, definitely over the next decades, of indigenous music, local conversations, and even if you can't understand the local languages or you've never heard the music before, it's totally fascinating. And to capture this before it disappears and actually archive it. So working, my partner in crime, of course, is Thomas in many of these areas, so working on capturing these sounds on local radio, archiving them and storing them for essentially storing them forever.
That's really fascinating, Mark. We have time for a bit of a sample. I think I'm going to pick the evening gamelan music. Would you
sure.
Introduce that first?
So Ramadan occurs in not too many weeks from now. Ramadan will occur in the Muslim world, and so this is the month of fasting. And right above the top of Australia, our closest country really is Indonesia. It's even closer to Australia than New Zealand. And that actually happens to be the largest Muslim country in the world by population. So what happens in Indonesia during Ramadan, because they fast for the month, they actually break the fast when the sun sets. And that actually produces for the month a lot of festivities, people eating, family gathering and so on. And they get together around, and the radio stations that normally turn off continue late into the night and play this type of music. So this is a live gamelan orchestra in Yogyakarta in Java. These sounds are very exotic, and I quite often travel to Indonesia. It's so close, it's very cheap to travel there from Australia. But all, if you're actually not in Indonesia, to tune in at night and just, you know, kick back in the warm Australian Sydney climate and listen to that music, drinking a beer, which of course they're not drinking beer, but I am, and listen to that and just dream of what life might be like.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
We're going to have you on next year for sure with a longer segment, and thank you, Thomas. Same for you as well. Thanks, guys. All right, time is fine. We should reach our time for one more reading.
Shortwave Shindig at the SWL Winterfest, the 30th anniversary of the Winterfest. Congratulations to everyone. This is Jeff White down at WRMI in Okeechobee, Florida, wishing all of you all the best and hoping for another happy 30 years of the Winterfest.
Thank you. thank you, Jeff. We did have an interview with Jeff, but I'll put that online because we're about to run out of time on our first hour. So Saul Brody is going to sing us out with the Pass the Pine song, which references different places around the world, and love, You Belong to Me, song.
See the pyramids along the Nile. Watch the sunrise on the tropic isle. Just remember, darling, all the while, you belong to me. See the marketplace in old Algiers. Send me photographs and souvenirs. Just remember when a dream appears, you belong to me. I'll be so alone without you. Maybe you'll be lonesome too and blue. Fly the ocean in a silver plane. See the jungle when it's wet with rain. Just remember till you're home again, you belong to me. Just remember till you're home again, you belong to me.
Saul Brody, thank you so much. Stay tuned for Short Waves Long Distance. Thanks to Saul Brody, Chris Johnson, and Ryan Stiley for our music. Paul Ladd, Rich D'Angelo, Harold Combs, Bob Brown, Chris Field, Jeff White, Mark Fahey, and Thomas Witherspoon. Special thanks to our executive producers, Richard Cuff and John Pigliozzi. Love, as always, to Eileen and Abe, who love hearing about Shortwave even more than I like talking about it. Thanks. See you next year, and see you in the next hour for Shortwave's Long Distance. Just start, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, she's going to do an ID.